I am Plant on the Line in Vancouver at thecommentary.ca. It's always great fun and an honor, frankly, to have Steve Paikin on the program. I'm a big fan of his work on TVO, which you can see online off of their website or on YouTube. The program, The Agenda with Steve Paikin, is on weeknights, and it's a highly engaging and informative hour of television. He's also an accomplished author who has previously written 4 books. He was on the first time with me back in 2005 on the publication of his biography of the Ontario Premier John Robarts, who is one of the premiers discussed in his new book, Paikin and the Premiers. He starts with John Robarts and goes right up to the present day with Kathleen Wynne. You have reflections and transcriptions of interviews, for the most part done by Steve, of Bill Davis, Frank Miller, David Peterson, Bob Ray, Mike Harris, Ernie Eves, and Dalton McGuinty. It's fascinating stuff, an insight into power, politics, and leadership in Ontario over the last 50 years, as well as a great chance to read some of Paikin's interviews and see his astute, inimitable style. The book is already a bestseller, appearing on the lists of the Globe and Mail and the Toronto Star. A portion of the proceeds of this book will go towards TVO. Steve Paikin is the Chancellor of Laurentian University, and he recently celebrated his 20th anniversary at the Ontario Public Broadcaster. He has also written a book on hockey, the new game, and along with that Robarts biography, 2 great books on politics, politicians, and political culture, The Life and the Dark Side. Paikin and the Premiers is published by Dundurn. Please welcome back to the Planta Online program in Toronto today, Steve Paikin. Mr. Paikin, good morning.
Joseph, it's great to be with you again, and I have never forgotten, and nor will I forget, the fact that a long time ago, when some of those books were of perhaps less interest than this one I hope will be, you were one of the first people, maybe were the first person, to offer to talk to me about those books and give them some attention, and I'm grateful that you are interested enough in this one, too, to do it again, so thanks.
Yeah, you're very welcome. Because of your work and your keen interest in politics and history, this book seems like a no-brainer for you to do, because you have had access to a lot of Ontario premiers, I guess everyone since Davis, right?
And yes, and let's not forget Kathleen Wynne, who's probably the most historic of all. I managed to get the folks at Dundurn to push off the deadlines a bit, which was great. So we are current on this. Kathleen Wynne is in the book as well.
Yeah. Whose idea was it to do the book?
Well, it wasn't mine, funnily enough. I hadn't written a book in about 6 years because books are very hard to write. They take over your life. You got to go interview 100 people. You're writing every single day for a year. It's a lot. You lose your life in some respects, and so I was quite happy not writing one for a long time. But then a former member of Parliament named Patrick Boyer and I were having a conversation one day, this is a couple of years ago, and he said to me, Steve, you've interviewed every premier since Bill Davis, right? And I said, yeah. And he said, and you wrote a book about John Robarts, who was Davis's predecessor in the 1960s. And I said, yeah, that's true. He said, well, Steve, that's 50 years ago. He says, you've got kind of a direct connection to the last half century of Ontario premiers. And I said, oh, I hadn't thought of that, really. And he said, Steve, there's got to be a book in there somewhere. And I really didn't think any more of it. But I guess somewhere in the back of my head, the notion that there's a book in a half century of Ontario premiers and my relationship to them and what I have seen them do and my interviews with them, I guess that idea just started kicking around in my head, and eventually I had a meeting with Dundurn, Kirk Howard, who's a fellow Hamiltonian like me, and I told him what I thought the idea for the book could be, and he liked it, and it happened, and it's out now.
Yeah, it's a great read, especially if you like politics. I mean, you don't have to be from Ontario to get it or to enjoy it, and I mean, I'm from British Columbia, but I still enjoyed reading about these people.
I'm glad to hear you say that, because I agree with you. I think the themes, I mean, it happens to be a book about the last 9 premiers of Ontario, but you know what? You really could just change the names and make it, W.A.C. Bennett to Christy Clark, or, you know, pick any province, because the fact is the issues are pretty much the same wherever you go. We have issues in healthcare, we have issues in education, we have issues in resource development, we have issues around poverty, just keep going. Criminal justice, and these are the issues that premiers have to deal with every day of their lives while they hold the job. And it doesn't matter what province you're in, those issues are going to be relevant. And if you're I agree, you don't even just have to be interested in politics. If you're interested in how issues develop and how politicians handle them, I think you'll find something of interest in the book.
Now, of the ones that you've known personally, in terms of hanging out with them, meeting them, Is there a difference between how they are in public as opposed to how they are in private, say?
You know, the complicated answer to that is yes and no. The ones who are the most successful, I think, tend to be the most successful because they are the same in private as they are in public. They are being their authentic selves. And I think that's one reason why, for example, a guy like William Davis was the longest-serving premier of Ontario in the 20th century, because you got the sense that this was a guy who was who he was. By the time his premiership was over, 14 years later, Ontarians had a great, you know, deal of comfort, a great sense of comfort in the fact that this wise, intelligent, humane man was holding the tiller of the boat. And, you know, he decided to quit after winning four elections. I don't think anybody's won four elections in Ontario, four straight elections, in 100 years before him. But he decided to do that, even though he could have won a fifth election easily. There's no question about that. David Peterson and Bob Rae were the two opposition leaders going into the 1985 election, and had Bill Davis wanted to run again, he easily would have won, and you just ask the two of them, and they'll agree with that.
Yeah.
But he stepped aside, and his successor couldn't keep the dynasty going. We had 42 straight years of Tories in Ontario. Frank Miller couldn't keep the dynasty going, and things changed a great deal after that.
Is there one of the premiers that you've gotten to know over the years that's more fun than the other?
More fun? Boy, that's a good question. I always have a scream when I'm with Mr. Davis, I got to say. I mean, he's 84 years old right now, and he's, you know, not in the kind of health he wishes he were in, but he's a very fun guy to be with. Fun for me is not just, you know, shooting the breeze about today. I also love to pick his brains about stuff from years past. And, of course, the guy first got elected in 1959. Leslie Frost was premier. So he has an institutional memory that goes back well beyond a half century. And, you know, I just love picking his brain, getting old stories from the old days. He was premier during a simpler time and a better time in some respects. We had more social cohesion. We had less politics of personal destruction. He sat atop a minority government from 1975 to 1981 and yet still figured out how to manage to reach out to one party or the other to get stuff passed. It wasn't about crushing your enemies back then. It was acknowledging you had political adversaries, but learning how to work with them. We don't live in those times anymore, Joe, and I think that's unfortunate. But Mr. Davis, I think, is always fun to be with. David Peterson is a fun guy to be with. The guy is a rock star wherever he goes nowadays. And one of the things I like about David Peterson is the guy was probably the most popular politician in the country, and I mean any province, any politician, in the late 1980s. You know, he went in one election from 48 seats to 95, and went from, you know, having a minority government to a massive majority government. He won almost every single seat in the legislature. And 3 years after that, he lost his own seat and lost power to Bob Rae. And that would be enough to crush anybody, and yet this is a guy who's picked himself up, dusted himself off, and got back in the game, and he is a rock star into any, you know, any reception he walks into today, or any party he walks into. He is a big-time rock star. And, of course, Bob Rae, he's a fascinating guy, because he's such an intellect, and he's so bright, and he's got a great sense of humor. So there's something about all of them, I think, that makes them fascinating. You know, there have been tens of millions of Ontarians who have lived in this province since 1867, and only 25 got to be premier. So I'm quite intrigued about what qualities those 25 have that gets them to the top of their game.
Back to Davis for just a sec. In the interview transcript that's in your book, at the end of the interview, he says that you're the reason why he did the interview, and my sense is that he likes you a lot. Did you know why that is?
Well, it's not because I'm a Ticat fan, because he's a big Argo fan, so that wouldn't be it. I think it's a couple of reasons. I think, number one, I work at TVO, the Ontario Provincial Broadcaster. Mr. Davis created TVO. He is the godfather of this place. Some of us work to get the studio that I do the agenda in every night, have its name changed and named after him, and we did that a few years ago, and we were really happy to do that. So I know he cares about this place. I know he advocates on behalf of this place still. And I know he watches the program that I do. So that's, I think, one of the reasons we get along. And I think the other reason we get along so well is that he knows that I'm in this business for the right reasons. I'm not in this business to play gotcha with people. I'm not in this business to show anybody up. I'm not in this business to embarrass anybody. I'm really in this business because I want to understand the world better and through asking of questions, help my fellow citizens understand the world a little better. And I think Mr. Davis senses that, and it's, as he said, I mean, he was very kind in saying that. He said the only reason he agreed to do that interview was, I'm sure it was partly because it was me, and I'm sure partly it was because it was TVO. I mean, those are, despite my TICAC street cred, I think those are two things that he thinks go pretty well together.
How long after one's tenure does opinion on, say, them or their program settle? I mean, it's obviously reassessed if you go on. But is it too soon to look at Wynn or McGinty?
Yeah, I think it is, and only because, Dalton McGinty resigned from public life, I mean, it's less than a year ago already.
Yeah.
And, a lot of the stuff that Kathleen Wynn is having to deal with is stuff that was left behind by him. And really, until all of that stuff, you know, canceled gas plants and deleted emails and, you know, budget deficits going through the roof, you know, until all of that stuff finally percolates its way through the political system and we're kind of beyond all of those issues, and that may take, you know, 2, 3, 4, 5, 10 years, who knows how long it'll take, you really can't, probably with an eye towards history, accurately judge what kind of an impact these people had. You know, we're right now, Dalton McGinty's legacy is taking one hell of a kicking. And that's because people are focused very much, certainly the opposition anyway, I should say, is focused very much on those issues that I just referred to. But, you know, 10 years from now, are they going to be focused as much on gas plants and deleted emails? Or will they be focused more on the fact that Ontario had the highest scores of any English-speaking education system in the world? Or that we have full-day kindergarten for many more of Ontario's children today? Or that the coal-fired generating stations have been shut down, replaced by solar and wind, which are controversial to be sure.
Yeah.
But I think a lot fewer kids in the future are gonna have to deal with asthma because we don't burn coal and spew it all over the atmosphere as much. So, but these are not the judgments that are often made today. We're going to have to wait a while for those judgments to be made, and that's as it should be.
What about the Common Sense Revolution and the Harris years? I mean, are we there yet in terms of figuring out what all that meant?
Well, it's a great question because I think for some people with long memories, Mike Harris will go down in history as the most despised premier ever. There were hundreds of thousands of people that went into the streets to try to derail his Common Sense Revolution, and his supporters to this day love him for the fact that he didn't buckle at all. You know, his mantra was he did what he said he was going to do. And for the most part, he did. I mean, there were a few things along the way that he did that he didn't say he was going to do, and a few things that came along that he hadn't planned on, which derailed his agenda as well. The most obvious example was, Walkerton, the poison water tragedy that killed 7 people, or the Ipawash tragedy where there was a riot in the park and one Aboriginal Canadian was killed, Dudley George. So these things do come along, and they do have to be dealt with, but and that's part of the record, and Mr. Harris knows that's part of his record. But the other part of his record that I think more fair-minded people will grant him is that he saw a province in 1995 that, through the previous 10 years of Liberal and NDP governments, had moved too far to the left, had become overregulated, not dynamic enough, too dependent on the state. It was too hard to make a living. People were paying too much in taxes. This is what his belief was. And he did something historic. He went from third place to first place in one election, which hadn't been done in 72 years. And he determined, whether the unions liked it or not, or whether his opponents liked it or not, that he was going to drag Ontario, by his reckoning, back towards the middle. You know, others would say he dragged it to the far right to be in line with Alabama and Mississippi, but he would say, I just wanted to drag it back to the middle where it traditionally has been. And, we can still have a great debate. He's been out of power since 2002, so it's over a decade. We can still have a good debate about the Harris record, and, he's one of those, you know, Joseph, you don't have great debates about inconsequential premiers. Mm-hmm. So the fact that 10 years later we're still going to be debating Mike Harris's legacy does tell you that, for better or for worse, he was an incredibly consequential premier, and in fact the longest chapter in my book is about Mike Harris.
Yeah. Do the times shape the premier, or the premier shape the times?
Oh, boy, another one of those really great impossible questions. I'll tell you this. Timing is everything in politics. You're right to put your finger on the notion of timing as being so key. You don't get to be premier unless the qualities and the values and the program and the personality that you are offering feel right for the times. I remember John Robarts in 1970 went to the president of the PC party, Allen Eagleson, and he said, Allen, I'm a product of my times, and my time is done. He just knew that it was time for new leadership. He was in his, I guess, mid to late 50s at the time. And the I guess the great ones know when it's time to hang him up. Bill Davis knew when it was time to hang him up. Man never lost an election. But do they? Yeah, great leaders certainly shape their times. But they don't get the chance to become great leaders unless they put something on offer that the times seem to require. And that will be a great debate actually coming up for our next Ontario election. For your listeners, for example, in BC who may not be aware, we have a premier today who's a member of the Liberal Party. It's Kathleen Wynne, first ever female premier in Ontario history, who's a very well-liked, well-respected, center-left on the political spectrum politician. We also have in the province right now annual deficits in the lines of $11 to $12 billion. There are people who fear we are not going to balance our books by 2017, which is when the premier is promising to do so. We are mired in, I think the last count is, $250 billion of debt. And there is another party, the Conservative Party, led by Tim Hudak, which believes that we are just not taking radical enough surgery to government of operations in order to get those books balanced. So that's going to be the debate going forward. And, you know, what times do we live in? I don't know. I guess we're going to find out with the outcome of the next election. The times will either call for a radical, you know, for some radical surgery, as Tim Hudak is talking about doing, or it will call for a more steady-as-she-goes hand, if I can put it that way, that Premier Wynne is offering. Or let's not count out the NDP. I think the NDP are still very competitive in the polls. And they have the obviously instructive lesson of the British Columbia election and experience to go by, and they are talking about higher taxes on corporations and more social justice and lower insurance premiums and this kind of thing, car insurance premiums, and so let's not count them out of the mix of the next election either. I think anybody who tells you today that they know what the times call for, and therefore they know what the election outcome will be whenever that happens. Remember, it's a minority government. We don't know when it's going to happen. I think they're whistling Dixie. No one knows.
But the public, I mean, what's the line in the book from John Turner? The public gets it right?
The public is never wrong, he
said.
I like Huey Siegel's follow-up, though.
Remember that one? Yeah, that they're sometimes excessive.
That's right.
Yeah.
Huey Siegel, the senator, said the public is never wrong, although occasionally they are excessive.
Yeah.
And that's true, too.
So when Ontarians vote, as they have in the last 50 years or so, they sort of reflect, in the people that they elect, I should say, they reflect the times and say the concerns or priorities that they have. And
yes,
you see that in the leaders that become premier, right?
Yes. I think one of the reasons Kathleen Wynne won her leadership convention back in January at Maple Leaf Gardens, an historic building, an historic event, was that what she was offering was calm, steady, intelligent leadership, an ability to reach out to the other side. She's a Harvard-trained mediator, and she was offering this to Liberal Party delegates. Her chief opponent, Sandra Pupatello, interestingly enough, two women were the front runners of the contest. She was offering an in-your-face, feisty, fire and brimstone, we got to take it to the opposition because we're in a minority situation, and who knows, I think unspoken was, we could be into an election soon, and if we lose, you're going to need a real fire breather in opposition. That's what she was offering. And the delegates, in their wisdom, decided they wanted to try Kathleen Wynne style instead of Sandra Pupatello style. And John Turner's right, the people are never wrong. They made their choice. We'll see if they gauged the times we live in accurately, and if they did, then Wynn will win, and if they didn't, it'll be somebody else.
Now, you don't, in this book, rank the premiers, do you?
I don't,
no.
But, you know, I think if you put a gun to my head, I would say that certainly the most consequential premier of the last half century was Bill Davis. I don't think anybody could take that away from him.
And then I guess you put Robart second?
I want to plead the fifth going forward, you know, because it's harder to do. I don't think you could go wrong putting Robart second. I agree. I mean, what happened in Ontario in the 1960s will never happen again.
Yeah.
They balanced their budget every year. The revenues are flying in. They were building 2 and 3 schools a day, 5 new universities, a whole community college system. You know, the achievements of those years, they built and built and built. And we're just not going to see that kind of thing again.
So the skills and the achievement of say, Robarts in the 60s, Davis in the 70s, can those be imposed on today's leaders, today's times?
I don't think so, because the times are so different. And again, to quote Robarts, you know, you have to be a person of your time. And the time that Robarts governed in, I mean, he had 2 majority governments in a row. That's something Kathleen Wynne will not have. Dalton McGuinty did not enjoy when he left power. What he had on offer during the 1960s was appropriate to the time. They called him the chairman of the board because he really ran Ontario like it was Ontario Inc. He tried to run it like a business. By all accounts, he ran it really well. But remember, he also at that time, it wasn't the time of the politics of personal destruction, so even though he had a majority, he didn't feel a need to crush his enemies. He wouldn't even have called them enemies. In fact, I remember talking to Donald MacDonald, the former Ontario NDP leader, who said one of the things he loved about Robarts was that Robarts would tell the civil service, if a member of the opposition calls you and wants some information, you deal with them. You help them. Get them what they need. I know we're the government, but they work for, you know, you people work for all the people, not just us. And, you know, the notion that that kind of thing would happen today is fanciful. It just wouldn't. I mean, at least everything I've heard today suggests that it would not, and I think we're worse off for that.
What's it like to reread or view some of your old interviews? And do you sort of play Monday morning quarterback and wonder maybe I should have done things differently?
Oh, my goodness, do I ever. I mean, first of all, some days I ask myself, who the hell put me on the air looking like that? some of the stuff I was wearing or some, you know, my hair's too long or, I mean, whatever.
Well, that was the 90s, I guess, right?
Well, 80s in some cases.
Yeah.
Yes, I do wonder that all the time. And then that's part of the fun of it, to see, you know, you see Bob Rae as premier, and I guess he was, 41 or something when he became premier, maybe 40. But he looked about 26, so some of those old videos are really quite fun to watch. But yes, the thing I really do look for when I look back at the interviews is I do like to think I've learned how to do this job better over the years, and certainly some of the questions I asked, I groan at today when I hear them. I certainly could have asked them better, more intelligently, more to the point. But you know, when I interviewed Mike Harris after he won the premiership, I was 35, and today I'm 53, so hopefully I'm better at 53 than I was at 35.
And when you look back at the last 50 years of Ontario politics, do you glean some insight perhaps as to what the future might look like, what the next 50 years will look like?
I think we're living in times right now where, Joseph, you couldn't get me to predict what's going to happen 2 years from now, let alone 50 years from now. The pace of change, the cataclysmic pace of change, the constantly disruptive pace of change in our lives today is something that we're on Premier 9 now. Kathleen Wynne is my 9th premier. So I'm going to guess that the first 7 premiers had no clue about. Bob Rae was the first premier to send an email, okay? Mm-hmm. So that, you know, you think about all the premiers who had to deal in a world where there was no email, and now, of course, we take all of these different gizmos for granted.
Yeah.
I cannot imagine. I mean, it's part of what makes this all very exciting to watch. I cannot imagine how they're going to reinvent services, reinvent government, change democracy going forward, which is one of the reasons why I like to watch it so much.
Yeah, would you? Are you working on another book now?
I am not. Give me a break. I'm This one doesn't even go on sale until, well, we're talking here on Friday the 27th.
Yeah.
Yeah, this book doesn't even go on sale until tomorrow, so let's worry about selling this one before I start thinking about another one.
But I must say, when reading this book, it reminds me of the previous books, and I remember when I picked up The Life in high school, and I saw it in the...
Oh, my God, you are so nasty for saying that. Listen to you.
And I remember just loving what you were writing and loving the way that you speak in terms of your writing. I mean, it seems like you have a lot of fun with history, a lot of fun with politics.
There's no question.
It comes through in your books.
Well, I'm glad to hear that, because I do have a fascination for it, I have a love for it, and I love kind of talking about it or writing about it and hoping to bring other people along on the journey. A couple of days ago was the 50th anniversary of John Robarts' first election win,
mm-hmm.
September 25, 1963. He won a nice majority government for himself. And I got together for lunch with three of the rookie MPPs who got elected on that day 50 years ago. Two of them are 80, and one of them is 92.
Huh.
And they had a bit of a get-together for lunch, and there were other people in the room as well, of course, but I got some great old war stories about their first elections. This was Darcy McHugh, who would go on to become Ontario Treasurer, and ran for the leadership after John Robarts against Bill Davis, and was the guy who went to Bill Davis on the last ballot and helped make him premier. He's 80 now. Alan Eagleson, a name that will be familiar to many people, the former NHL Players Association head, and went to prison for a little while for breaking the law, doing some bad things, but he's 80 as well. And a guy named Gordon Carton, who's 92 years old, was a cabinet minister for a short time in Bill Davis's government, and these guys are still interested in public life. They're still engaged, and they still care, and it's just fascinating to hang around with them for a little while and find out what they cared about 50 years ago.
Yeah, it's always nice talking to you, Steve, and I hope you've been well, and congratulations on this book, and good luck with it.
Thank you so much, and as always, you're so kind to spend so much time with me and to ask these questions and help me get the word out, because I do love history, and I think we're all better off if we understand it a little bit better, and I think this book is a nice, accessible way, very anecdotal, nice, accessible way to kind of learn more about our past, and it's a cliche, but I'm going to say it anyway. You know, you can't know where you're going unless you know where you've been, and I've always been a believer in that, so I hope people get it, and I hope they like it.
Indeed. And if
available at better bookstores everywhere, as they say.
Absolutely, yeah. And if you're looking to bone up on Ontario politics going into the next election, you can certainly do that with this book. The chapter on Wynne certainly takes you to that place. The book is called Pakin and the Premiers. It's published by Dundurn. The Agenda with Steve Pakin is on weeknights on TVO. Its anchor and senior editor, Steve Pakin, joined me on the line from Toronto and Vancouver. I'm Joseph Plunton.